Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, May 11, 2017. Former Chief of South Sudan Army, General Malong, is no longer on his way to Awil and may be back to Juba.
Some arrangements were not put in place and some security arrangements were not put in place, and that's why I could not go today. But as soon as those arrangements are completed, we'll definitely come back tomorrow.
And a South Sudanese civil society group here in the United States is calling on President Trump to take action on the crisis in South Sudan.
Now we are in process of petitioning the United States government and U.S. Congress to pressure the warring parties, because we cannot just stand and watch what has gone on now, right now in our country, because it's affecting every individual.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governor of Eastern Lakes State says the ousted Army Chief General Malong is in Urol awaiting his security clearance from Juba officials so that he and his bodyguards can return to the capital. The governor insists Malong is not being detained, but says he is hosting the general and his soldiers as guests at his residence. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Eastern Lake State Governor Bor Wachod Bor says he met with General Malong yesterday shortly after his arrival to Urol. Bor says Malong told him that he left Juba because he does not want his presence to cause more insecurity among the people of South Sudan, and that is why he wanted to go and rest in his hometown, Awil. Reports surfaced yesterday that Malong was traveling with a heavy armed military convoy to Awil after being fired by President Salva Kiir. Some residents of Awil said they were afraid Malong may try to mount a rebellion from a military base in Awil. Governor Bor says he and his staff received an instructions directly from President Kiir not to allow General Malong to continue his journey to Awil.
Well, we actually persuade him not to proceed, simply because we don't want problems at this time. We don't want the nation to have any other pressure situation, because already the nation has been going through a lot of ups and downs.
Malong was relieved from his post as Army Chief of General Staff on Tuesday night without explanation. Bor insisted that Malong is not being detained, but rather the general is simply waiting for his clearance to return to Juba.
He's not detained. He's a free person. He's putting up with me in my personal residence, and I'm hosting him as a guest in my house, and so there's nothing like being under detention or anything.
Bor says President Kiir spoke to Malong on the phone and personally asked him to return to Juba. Malong and some of his junior officers have raised concern over their security once they are back in Juba. Governor Bor says some officers are worried that they will not have the proper documents to return to Juba.
Some arrangements were not put in place, and some security arrangements were not put in place, and that's why I could not go today. But as soon as those arrangements are completed, we'll definitely come back tomorrow.
Governor Bor says during his meeting with Malong, the general did not mention any personal problems with President Kiir. He called on all South Sudanese not to panic, but to work for peace.
People should embrace peace at this time, because South Sudan has been undergoing a lot of issues, and it is still undergoing situation of insecurity and sporadic rebellions in different states. And therefore, people should embrace the spirit of peace and a culture of peaceful resolution of matters.
It is not clear when Malong will return to Juba. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A U.S.-based South Sudanese civil society group says the Trump administration should put pressure on President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to end the violence in South Sudan. A group calling itself the Concerned Citizens of South Sudan says the U.S. played a major role in ending the longest conflict in what was then Southern Sudan. Jonkur Kwot Mayol, a member of the group, says some South Sudanese communities do not see each other eye to eye because of political and ethnic divisions.
Since we fought South Sudanese against the oppressors north, we were not expecting, after we gained independence in 2011, to turn the guns against ourselves. And that's why in last year, July 9, we were able to found a concerned citizen of South Sudan. It is an advocacy group, advocate for peace and stability. Most of all, to influence the young intellectual South Sudanese to talk about the peace and care and love to each other. And overall, now we are in process of petitioning the United States government and U.S. Congress to pressure the warring party to use the same mechanism that they have been using since 2005 to bring the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in Sudan. This is the state we are in, because we cannot just, you know, stand and watching what has gone on now, right now in our country, because it's affecting every individual. They have been divided on the ethnic line, which has been created by President Kiir, you know, and his peers in the government.
I've heard that from a lot of people who are blaming President Salva Kiir for what is going on in the country. But why would you blame one person?
Salva Kiir is responsible. He has responsibility of overseeing what's going on in the country. And he has responsibility of bringing peace in the country. Because being a president is not just, you know, like any other jobs. And that's why you have to take that responsibility, you know, and bring about the peace in the country.
Yeah, but he signed the peace agreement in August 2015. With Dr. Riek Machar.
Well, that peace agreement that he had signed actually has a reservation, and that's why you have seen in July they already slipped into the war again, because he was not convinced this is the peace, actually, because what has happened, President Kiir created all this thing, you know, since December of 2013, because when he just bypassed the process within the political party, SPLM party, when he just skipped the process of political bureau and went through the Liberation Council in order, you know, to avoid all these colleagues within the party. That's indication there this man, it was planning for something, because he wanted to stay on the power.
Jonkor, I don't like speaking about ethnicity and tribalism and whatnot, but it sounds like you come from the same state with President Kiir, or from the same region with President Kiir. And here you are blaming him for all the wrong things in South Sudan. Why are you doing that?
Of course, John, I'm blaming President Kiir for the ethnic line that South Sudan is now sliding into. And as I said, I'm from Northern Barkazal, especially from the town of Bawil. You know, we are the most affected people. President Kiir has already used, you know, so-called Matanganyor, you know. He trained army along the army in order to maintain the power.
But do you have a proof? Do you have a proof that President Kiir is training people from his village to destabilize South Sudan?
One thing that I do see here, because President Kiir, he wanted to stay in the power. In order to stay in the power, he was able to train the ignorant young Dinka from our area. And these people actually don't know what they're doing. By using those, you know, young, ignorant people to maintain power and intimidate people in Equatoria, intimidate people in Bahr al-Ghazal areas, in Upper Nile. That's why he maintained the power.
What would you like the U.S. administration to do for the people of South Sudan?
Well, currently, like I said, you know, we are petitioning the United States government and U.S. Congress, you know, to put pressure in the warring party, to intervene, not just only pressure, to intervene in order for South Sudanese to go back on, you know, on the round table to diagnose the problem from the root cause, so we can have peace and sustainable peace and justice in our country.
And what is the root cause of the problem? What is the root cause?
Of course, the root cause of this problem it has something to do with the power and resources, because when the resources are not allocated always in the right manner, you are likely, you know, to have problem in the country.
That's John Kurkwot Mayol, member of the Concerned Citizens of South Sudan, a U.S.-based South Sudanese civil society group. He was speaking to me from Utah early this week. A spokesman for Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has denied Mugabe is sleeping when he closes his eyes for long periods at public events. The French news agency AFP quotes spokesman George Charamba as saying President Mugabe is simply resting his eyes from the bright lights. The Zimbabwean leader often has his eyes closed at public events, including the recent World Economic Forum meeting on Africa. The spokesman says the 93-year-old Mugabe's eyes cannot, in his words, suffer bright lights. Mugabe is in Singapore for what is being described as a regular medical checkup by his spokesman. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the chief of the UN mission in South Sudan says he worries about thousands of additional South Sudanese being displaced by violence. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could choose one nice thing to do for your family, what would it be?
Well, the nicest thing I think I can do for my family right now is to give them enough money so that my mom and dad don't have to work again because they're old.
I'll give them comfort because comfort is the most thing everybody should get. Because when you have comfort, you ease off stress.
That thing I would do for them is education. I will offer them education because that's the best thing you can offer to somebody, because enable that person to get up and make a choice for his or herself.
I would choose to bring my family together, to be in unity, because I know that when the family is in unity, there is happiness, there is love.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A top United Nations official in South Sudan says he's deeply concerned about recent fighting between government and armed opposition forces, which he says has displaced thousands of civilians from their homes. UNMISS Chief David Shearer says the fighting is worsening the humanitarian situation as civilians are forced to flee to remote areas inaccessible by aid agencies. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Sierra says recently UNMISS observed an uptick in fighting in Kaka, Wausiluk and Kodok, along with the skirmishes on the Juba border road. In the last 2 months, Sierra says fighting between the warring parties has displaced at least 35,000 civilians to approach an IDP camp in Kodok, and aid agencies cannot reach many of them.
We are worried that without that assistance, there could be an outbreak of diarrhea and possibly cholera. We've had one case of cholera already.
Sierra says a lack of clean water and other basic necessities in these areas are immediate challenges facing thousands of displaced South Sudanese. For the first time, UNMISS last week deployed peacekeeping troops in Kodok to make sure urgently needed aid was delivered to the affected population, according to Sierra. A statement released today by the French medical organization MSF, or Doctors Without Borders, says because of deteriorating living conditions over the last 2 weeks at an IDP camp in Abroch, which hosts thousands of displaced from Kaka, Kodok and Wausiluk, at least 20,000 civilians have fled to Sudan. Both MSF and UNMISS blame the warring parties for failing to respect the permanent ceasefire stipulated in the 2015 peace agreement. The peace deal signed by President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar requires the leaders of both sides to immediately cease hostilities. Sierra says the continuing fighting is caused by the failure of the two leaders to respect the peace deal.
We are engaging as much as we can with all actors to try and bring about a settlement. We were encouraged a few weeks ago when President Kiir announced a ceasefire. Unfortunately, on the ground has not materialised. We hope that will be able to be put into place in the coming weeks. We have consistently called for a stop to the fighting, to the conflict. We do not believe that that is the way forward for South Sudan. It's going to ultimately depend on a political settlement.
Presidential spokesman Atteny Wek Atteny denies the army has failed to respect the ceasefire.
Our army has been responding on self-defense. Again, the international community refused to pay the money for the implementation of the security arrangements. How do you expect an armed rebel to go to containment area when there is actually no money provided for those places?
SPLAIO military spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel also claims the rebels are fighting in self-defense.
We have not attacked anybody anywhere else. If ever we are fighting, it's just because we are repulsing them. We are repulsing their own attack. We are paying back what they are doing to us. Because we cannot sit while they continue torturing us. We have to make sure that we also defend ourselves.
Sierra says he is also concerned about recent fighting between youth in Jonglei and Boma states.
From what we can understand, they are heavily armed, and therefore, as a result of that, any clashes could result in a large number of casualties.
Sierra is calling on the government to do everything in its power to de-escalate the tension between young people in Boma and Jonglei states. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
During a forum today held at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington, Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat from the East Coast state of Delaware, who last visited Unity State and Bidibidi refugee camp in Uganda, told the audience that he witnessed the effects of the ongoing war on South Sudanese. Senator Coons say he made it clear to the Kiir administration that the government should do more to protect aid workers in the country.
There were three humanitarian workers killed in WOW literally just the day that I arrived. And one of the issues I raised with President Kiir directly is why should the United States continue to try so hard to deliver humanitarian assistance through many partners and NGOs when your government and your forces are blocking access and using hunger as a weapon of war?
After the event, South Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Garang Ding Kwang, downplayed statements made by Senator Coons and other participants that his government is deliberately targeting aid workers.
But the government is committed to protect the aid workers that are operating within the areas that are controlled by the government. But the one thing that the aid workers have to put in their mind is that when they are going out outside the government-controlled areas, they have to coordinate their missions with the government so that they are given enough information about the security in the area. So we regret that the aid workers went to South Sudan to assist South Sudanese and been killed in South Sudan. And we hope that both sides in the conflict will adhere to humanitarian rules that aid workers and other operating people in South Sudan are safe so that they can deliver effectively what they are supposed to deliver to South Sudanese people.
Ding says his government is doing what it can with the little resources it has to implement the August 2015 peace agreement and to conduct a national dialogue that could bring South Sudan's many fractured communities together.
And the situation in South Sudan is that there are multiple actors in the South Sudan scene. There are several of armed groups who are running about in the country. And it is very difficult to make accountability as to who killed the aid workers.
The United Nations reports that at least 80 aid workers have died in South Sudan since the war erupted in 2013. That report was prepared by Ian Bior in Washington. Family members of two teenagers critically injured by South Sudanese government soldiers in July say the girls still suffer nightmare as a result of the conflict. But a military spokesman says the army has no policy of deliberately targeting civilians, particularly women and children. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Pagirinya refugee settlement in Uganda's Adjumani district.
Mary Keji, the mother of the girls, says they were lucky to survive the attack at their home in Kerepe on July 12. She says the family was about to have lunch when they suddenly heard gunshots near the compound. Keji says she immediately grabbed one child born with a disability and headed to the bush. Speaking in her native Mari language, Keji says she saw the villagers running in different directions and assumed her two daughters had also fled.
We ran to Ikwa village. Some women arrived a while later and told me my daughters had been shot. I asked how this could have happened because I assumed the girls fled in another direction. But the women told me that the girls never left the house. This immediately broke my heart.
17-year-old Helen Amadio says as soon as the shooting started, she and her sister Agnes ran inside the house and took cover. Speaking in Mari, Amadio says what happened next will continue to traumatize her for the rest of her life.
The soldiers came twice. The first time, they opened fire indiscriminately in the compound for a couple of minutes and then left. They returned shortly afterwards and started shooting again. Two soldiers stood in front of the kitchen and fired several rounds into our houses. That's when they shot us.
Helen's mother says the girls are extremely lucky to be alive.
One of the girls was shot just above the thigh, and the bullet left a large exit wound on her buttocks. In the case of the other girl, the bullet penetrated just below the right shoulder. It almost shattered her spinal cord, but thank God it did not.
Amadio says she realized after she had been hit that she was bleeding. Then she noticed her sister Agnes was lying in a pool of blood. Amadio says she could not call out for help because the gunmen outside were still shooting.
Initially, my sister did not realize she was hit. When I told her I had been shot, she advised me to keep quiet. She said if I cried out, the soldiers would finish us off, so I endured the pain silently.
South Sudan Deputy Army spokesperson Colonel Santo Domic says the military has no policy of deliberately targeting civilians, particularly women and children. He says sometimes refugees make up such accusations against government soldiers to strengthen their case for resettlement in a third country. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
From Kampala, we go to Yaounde, where journalists in Cameroon say they are struggling to do their jobs amid restrictions over coverage of the ongoing strike in English-speaking zones and the Boko Haram conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
In Cameroon, 8 journalists have been arrested in connection with their coverage of a controversial strike in English-speaking parts of the country that began in November. In March, the National Communication Council, NCC, suspended another 18 reporters and media organizations. The NCC said they failed to respect professional norms and ethics. Some had published reports critical of the state's handling of the strike, while others had reported on concerns raised over the repatriation of Nigerian refugees displaced by Boko Haram. Peter Esoka is president of the NCC. He told VOA journalists must report responsibly.
Now, if you go beyond respect of the laws and the law comes down on you like a sledgehammer, it's your fault. That's where responsibility also comes. If you don't respect what is supposed to guide a nation, there's chaos. Do you allow for chaos because you're talking about freedom? No.
Journalists in Cameroon say that is what is at stake, press freedom.
We know that a newspaper is a marketplace of ideas. We can talk about federalism, not necessarily to promote it, but we can talk about the merits and demerits of federalism. So when you slam a ban on a topic like that, you cannot say that the press is free in Cameroon.
Kinin Sam is bureau chief at the Post newspaper regional office in Yaoundé. He is referring to a new warning issued April 23 by the NCC that media should not report on demands for cessation or a return to federalism by strikers in English-speaking zones. At some newsroom and others like it around the country, reporters say the restrictions have had a chilling effect. Eugene Fongwa is editor-in-chief of the Standard Tribune.
For instance, we have criminal libel, which is like a permanent axe over the head of the journalist, which means that the simple fact that you can go to jail for doing journalism is a deterrent to free work. And so you find that a lot of journalists have gone into self-censorship.
Authorities have arrested journalists under both the 2014 counter-terrorism law and the revised penal code of 2016. Three journalists for privately owned media were brought to court in January for failure to disclose information that officials say could harm state security, specifically on the issue of armed groups from the troubled Central African Republic operating in Cameroon. The three were released on bail. Last month, a military tribunal sentenced a reporter for the Radio France International Hausa service to 10 years in prison over charges of complicity to terrorism. Cameroon's Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma, said all arrested journalists will get a fair trial.
A few of these journalists found themselves in breach of justice for reasons having nothing to do with the ethical and deontological norms of their profession. I am mostly thinking of those who are accused of threats to public security, national integrity, or being accomplice with terrorist activities. For each of these cases, they were brought before competent courts, which rules out in all freedom and all independence.
Some journalists in the country have taken to wearing black as a silent form of protest. Both Freedom House and Reporters Without Borders downgraded Cameroon in global press freedom indexes released last month. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's our show for this Thursday, and we'll leave you with this new song, Kororu, by Kebas and Controller. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Take her home, but now it is the time. Oh, I gotta let you know you're my loving. I gotta let you know you're everything. Baby, ponder kuwani, ina take it off, haki lolo. Everything you love, I will give it to you. Every time you hold on, I touch it for real. You wanna make me feel this love in a mission. Oh, baby girl, I let me sign a eye. Let me stand up. I will give you all the time in this world, partner. Don't you say what I'm a partner, baby, call me a fender. Rule on your rhythm, gonna give you all of my time. Can you need to my other boy, I'm a guy. Kill all your mother.
Me
do I detect physical. Love and affection, a human attraction, a really connection, all to you, girl. My touch, my calm, tell us. I'm wondering if I get the physical. I saw him on my steps, I'm with more, but I don't want you out there. I'm wondering if he's too lean now. Baby girl, you know the love that I have for you. No, I'm not.